Hello, everyone, and welcome to Not Quite Hollywood, episode 56. I'm Jamie.
I'm Alex.
And I am Tim.
Today we are bringing topics. If you're new to the show, every even episode we discuss topics. We each bring one to the table. And then every odd episode we talk about a film. And we each bring one of those to the table. At the end, stay tuned. We're going to have our 52 pickup. I'm going to talk about a film that I recently watched for my challenge. And Tim will give us his communal movie for next time.
Oh, yeah, okay.
So I think about that as you go. I almost forgot about that. Yeah.
All right.
Alex brought that up. I was like, shit, the other day. I'm like, shit. As always, follow us on Twitter, NQHPod. We're on Facebook at Not Quite Hollywood. And this post on guyinawire.com and my blog, if you want to catch our backlog of all of our 56 episodes, please do that. They're for free. It's just iTunes doesn't let us have enough. It's not fair.
Aww.
But fuck you, iTunes. No.
Oh, wow.
Shit. No. They got us. They flagged us. And stay tuned for a special contest brought to you by our own Alex Howard. So we're going to start with Alex's topic, but we want to briefly mention that we're going to talk about a very breaking news story. The second biggest writer's strike in our generation that is pending today. They're voting on it. As of recording time, it may change, but
the deadline's midnight tonight.
And then we find out on Wednesday, right?
Oh, really?
Okay.
So people said Wednesday or something.
Because I saw an article they could start striking as early as tomorrow. So.
Oh, wow.
Either way, we're going to have a little tiny update here for you at the end of that segment. So even if it's just me, I'll tell you what's up with that. So
stay tuned.
Yeah, you'll hear a different type of audio quality. Maybe it'll be like really sexy and stuff and close to it. But I don't know. We'll see.
Super, super sexy.
So the writers are striking right now.
They're striking so hard.
Picking up striking. Pick a sign. In and out. and then we're also going to talk about the advent of YouTube content and how that relates to film. So that's Tim's topic. We'll take it away, Alex. What do you got for us?
So my topic is movies that everyone likes that we hate.
Okay, I guess. Traditionally celebrated films that we don't like.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, so I have a couple of those myself. It's hard to find them, though, I feel.
Yeah. I know some people have more, like, personal reasons why they don't like the movies that everyone else just adores. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. There are definitely some times when I'm watching a movie and I'm like, why do people like this so much? Like, yeah. I honestly don't understand.
So mine is The Usual Suspects. I think the twist, it wasn't that surprising to me. I was like, that was it.
Spoiler for Usual Suspects.
Wait, you haven't seen it, so I'm not going to spoil it.
So don't spoil it. Don't spoil it. Never mind.
I almost did. But yeah, the twist wasn't that big of a deal for me. The movie didn't do it for me. Citizen Kane, maybe because I watched it in class. Maybe I should try again, but it just wasn't.
It felt more academic at that point.
Yeah, it was like,
I mean, I did like Citizen Kane, but again, it wasn't like mind-blowing.
Yeah.
Citizen Kane, we've discussed it before. August fucking hates the film. So, but the thing about Citizen Kane to me is that looking back on it with the guide of our teacher, because I watched it in class too, telling us all the breakthrough technologies they use at that time. Like at that time, they spliced the film so they had a dual focus between the front and the back, like far. The focal distance was so far. And yet it looked really cool. And then some other things like story elements and stuff. But yeah, as a film, it's really long and it's well acted. It just, I think it just doesn't hold up as an entertaining film as much as it used to. Now it's more of a history lesson.
Yeah.
But it still has a place in the world for that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's like a classic, but then it's like,
yeah.
It's a classic.
It's not a classic that I'm going to be like, oh, I can watch this every day.
Yeah, right. I think it's like, it's important. But I'm not going to be like, oh, let's watch this in Kane.
Yeah.
Mulholland Drive, also not a big fan of Mulholland Drive.
Don't spoil it. I haven't seen it yet.
Have you seen that?
I've seen the first half. I need to watch the second half.
Okay. The second half gets really weird.
But that's kind of why, like, even the first half, though, is super stilted. And that's why I was, like, really thrown off. And people were like, oh, that's the point. And I never finished it. So I should. We should watch it together.
Yeah,
I'd
like to.
I have not seen it.
The one that first came to mind when I was looking at the IMDb Top 250 was, because of my taste, I'm not a big fan of the Lord of the Rings trilogy. I don't like fantasy as much.
Ouch. Once again, not seen the last two, but...
Guys, you guys are killing me.
Like, I enjoyed them. They were fine.
$15,
I know.
But I would never buy them. I think I'd eventually... I would watch the extended... Because I've never seen the extended cuts. But I would never rewatch them because they're too fucking long. I watch them once and then call it good.
Oh, man.
We'll do that.
We just have to sorry, set aside an entire See? Day and watch all three extended for 12 hours.
Let's do it.
Another one that I haven't, to be fair, revisited since I watched it in 2000 was Gladiator.
You know what? How about you? I didn't like either.
Because I don't like period pieces yet, which is ironic because I always get this. I get this argument. I don't like fantasy and I don't like period pieces. Yet I'm super excited for Thor Ragnarok, which has essentially the same fucking gladiator fight, and it's a fantasy in sci-fi setting. That's it's dumb to think of that distinction, but it's true. I think
my thing with Gladiator was that, you know, I had seen the spoofs or whatever so many times, and then when I saw it, it just seemed so unoriginal because I'd seen all the things about it before.
Man.
And I saw it like last year, 2 years ago for the first time. I was like, that's it? Like, yeah.
See, I watched Gladiator, like, I saw snippets of Gladiator when it first came out in theaters because I was watching, do you guys remember Dinosaur?
Yeah.
The show?
No, the movie, Dinosaur. Like the
anime? Oh, yeah. Came out the same year.
Yeah, same year. And so it was in the theaters at the same time. So my parents put us kids in Dinosaur, and they went to watch Gladiator. And it ended a little early, so I'm like, oh, they're in this theater, so I'm going to walk in. And this was during the big arena fight. And I was in, like, third grade, and I was terrified because I'm just watching these people get killed. And so I did not want to watch it for so long. And then a couple years later, I watched it, and I fell in love. I was like, this is amazing. Russell Crowe became my favorite actor for the longest time. Oh, man. I loved it so much.
What are some of yours, though? Like, what are things that you, like, don't care for?
Okay, this one... I think the one that really comes to mind is Revenant.
Oh, interesting.
I fucking hated Revenant.
Huh.
I wanted to hate it, but I couldn't hate it.
Oh, I hated it. I hated so bad. I hated everything about the process because you guys heard about all the stuff that happened on set.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which is one of the reasons why I was like, this isn't worth it, first off, because even just watching the trailer, I'm like, okay, this looks like it's an intense movie, but it doesn't look like it's worth getting people hurt, which they did, and people got fired for it, which was stupid.
Wait, who got hurt?
A lot of the crew members, yeah. They got frostbites and all that stuff. What? And when they brought it up to the director, he said... Like, they didn't say anything, and actually the person who brought it up got fired from the set.
Huh.
So there was a whole, like, people trying to sue. It was a whole thing.
I didn't even know that.
Yeah.
I knew that Leonardo DiCaprio, like, ate the...
veal or whatever, finishing?
Yeah. Mm. Like, actually ate it.
Yeah, but that's just... He was so desperate for an Oscar at that point. I mean...
Yeah. And I also don't think he deserved that Oscar. Also, I just didn't think... It was so, like... self-important, very masturbatory, like, in terms of, like, the cinematography was beautiful, but, like, that last moment when, like, it's, like, a 2-minute push-in on him, and then he just, like, suddenly locks eyes with the camera, pushes in, and then it goes back. I'm just like, fuck you. Fuck you. It was so self-indulgent for me.
Huh.
That's why
I thought about Birdman.
Oh, yeah, I didn't really like Birdman. No, I didn't like Birdman. I liked it a lot more than I thought I would. Because it was entertaining. I think the writing was definitely, like, it was witty.
Uh-huh.
And then, like, seeing they did have some great performances, but it was definitely, again, very self-important.
Yeah.
Very masturbatory. Same director, right?
Yeah.
He's
just so, like, full of himself. I feel
it's
like,
very much like, oh, look at me. I'm such a director. And, like, I'm like...
My name's Alejandro.
Alejandro. Yeah, so that one.
Look at my name.
My name's Alejandro.
A more recent one for me. I liked a lot of things about it, but I don't think it deserved the praise it got. And I get why it was loved. I get the message behind it, but Zootopia for me was not as important to, you know, as a film than Kubo and the Two Strings to me was,
absolutely.
Was more important. Absolutely. But I get why the message is there. I'm just looking through the list. There's almost none of the other ones in 250 I'd hate. Did you not see The Godfather or did you not like it?
I like The Godfather. I haven't seen part two.
Okay.
I haven't seen The Godfather. Oh, that was another thing. I did not necessarily... I liked the first Kill Bill. I did not like the second Kill Bill.
I get you.
I did not like Kill Bill 2. People are like, Kill Bill 2 is better than the first one. I was like...
Is that the one with all the fights? Or is the first
one? No, the first one's
all the fights.
Okay.
The second one was like trying to explain the first one. Yeah. And like in the very Tarantino... Again, like I don't like it when directors are very self-important and it's like, this is a Tarantino...
Is the second one with that big animation montage?
No, that was the first one. When Ora and Rishi is under the bed as a kid.
I clearly only remember the first one because it was better.
Yeah.
And also, like...
Second one had the Daryl Hannah fight in the trailer. And the second one had the Five Finger Death Punch with her and Bill at the table talking about the daughter and all the shit.
I don't remember this.
It's really slow.
That's the one with the big fight with, what's her name?
What?
The big fight at the end where she fights all of the guys?
No, that's the same first movie.
That's the first
movie?
That's the first movie,
yeah.
Oh my god. It's a very long movie, too, and I saw the second. Oh, and also, Django fucking Unchained, I could not stand it.
What? I liked it.
Ugh. I liked it a lot, yeah.
Okay, I liked the first half of it. You guys also, spoiler alert.
Yep.
After Christoph Waltz's character died, I was like, the movie could be over. I love Inglourious Basterds, and I think that's my favorite Tarantino film.
It's mine.
Yeah, and I don't like almost any of his other ones. Hmm. Like I.
Oh, interesting. So you're saying even Reservoir Dogs, Pulp Fiction, you don't?
Seen I like Reservoir Dogs a lot.
But okay. Then, like, I saw
Jackie.
Like,
huh? You see Jackie Brown?
I haven't seen Jackie Brown. No.
I've seen very few of his stuff, but then like from things that I've seen, like I loved Inglourious Basterds, which is I'm like, oh, I'm all about Tarantino. And I saw Kill Bill, and I'm like, oh, I'm all about Tarantino. I saw Kill Bill 2, and I was like, eh, not really. Django's like, And then I...
What about Hateful Eight?
Huh?
Hateful Eight? I
could not get myself to see it. Like, I watched it. I did not want to.
I wasn't a big fan of it. It definitely felt like he was extending the takes just for the fuck of it.
The only reason I would watch that movie was because I love the composer. And Neil Morricone.
Yeah, great. He came back. Oh my god, I couldn't believe that.
Because he like one of my favorite scores is the scores of The Mission, back with like Robert De Niro, Liam Neeson, and Jeremy Irons, like in 83 or something.
Sounds cool.
And the score is so fucking beautiful.
That should be your movie.
Hmm? Oh.
Yeah, you should do that if you're just spoilers.
That could be the movie.
Spoiler alert for the podcast.
Yeah. We don't know yet.
I don't know, but yeah.
Do you like A Beautiful Mind?
I love A Beautiful Mind.
Yeah, I like that movie a lot.
I guess it doesn't hold up as well as it once did.
Really? I haven't seen it in a long time. But
I've been told it definitely shows its age in terms of how of much of a biopic it is.
Oh,
how it feels like, very formulaic. Yeah.
But I mean, it was one of the first ones that they did that stood out, right?
More or less, yeah. So I mean, they've been doing it forever. But
it's almost like, I guess my opinions have changed over the years, but I think the film needs to be able to stand the test of time and, you know, oh, it was revolutionary for that time. It's like, yeah, but is it, you know, it's kind of like...
It's hard. Well, I guess you have to see, like, for instance, Blair Witch Project. I watched it recently for the very first time and I didn't care for it that much because I was like, it's all been done before. But then the more I thought about it later, I'm like, wow, every other movie took from this movie.
Yeah.
So it's still very dated.
When you watched it, though, like, I watched it 4 years ago and... I never felt like I was lost in the woods before I saw that movie. Like, when I was watching it, I literally felt like I was lost in the woods. That's what was so scary about it.
That's another movie for me. What? Blair Witch Project. I watched it when it came out before all the found footage shit came out into play. And it was just, it was kind of creepy sometimes, but it was drawn out and kind of boring. And then at the end, I was so pissed off at the ending. I'm like, what the fuck is this? Mm. Get the fuck out of here.
I think you and I can both agree that we didn't like Slight, though.
Oh yeah, we watched Slight yesterday. Awful. It was bad.
Yeah, people are loving it though.
I don't know why.
Oh my god! Because
they have the magic thing and they have the crime thing, and it doesn't intersect until like the very end. And you're like, am I watching two different movies right now? Like the last 5 minutes of it.
Oh man,
them together.
It's just I don't know. It gets popular.
I mean, I was down because apparently it was at Sundance and Blumhouse produced it, so I was like, oh, this should be good. And the good thing is, the script is already done for that. So.
Oh, thank God. They can make it. Now, speaking of scripts, that's a good transition. We have to talk about this current event, this very detrimental event to what we know as Hollywood. And it is the pending, again, we'll update you at the end of this segment as we find out more news, the writer's strike. The WGA is going to strike. Now, this has not been the first time it's happened. The writer's strike, there was one that happened for 100 days in late 2007, early 2008.
That sounds so epic.
100 days?
100 days.
Yeah. It ruined a lot of shows. It truncated a lot of things. A lot of live shows or shows that were daily had to be kind of shelved or shown reruns for a while.
Do we want a list of what shows were affected?
Yeah, let's talk about the shows that were affected from the old strike, and then we'll get into the current event.
Smallville season 7, one of my favorites. Sarah Connor Chronicles season 1.
Supernatural season 3.
Heroes season 2.
I know.
Obviously, because Heroes season 2 sucked.
Oh, Heroes season 2 was so bad. That poor Caitlin girl got stuck in the alternate future. She never came back.
Prison Break.
Oh, really?
Prison Break, One Tree Hill, The Office.
Wow. What season?
Office season 4.
Huh. That's what the one that had longer shows?
Yeah.
Oh my god.
Lost season 4. How I Met Your Mother season 3.
Wow.
Wow, I didn't realize How I Met Your Mother was going on that time.
It's really weird. Yeah. Like, you can watch... sometimes I go back and watch shows, and I can, like, tell when the strike was, because I'm like, wow, this sucks.
Yeah.
Yeah. Big Bang Theory season 1. 30 Rock season 2.
Oh, wow.
Which I feel like that one really...
Breaking Bad season 1, because they had a really short season 1.
Yeah.
Oh, interesting.
Bone season 3. Oh, show postponed. Wait, here. Hannah Montana.
Was canceled because of it?
Postponed.
Oh, fuck them. Should have canceled it when they had the chance.
Wait, Miley Cyrus has so much potential.
Pushing Daisies. See, look, yeah, Pushing Daisies. Man, I loved that show so much.
Hmm.
She was canceled during the strike. Big Shots, which is now back, right?
Wait, oh, Little Big Shots, the Steve Harvey show?
It just said Big Shots.
Oh, I think that's not a show.
I also read that Amazing Race had one season before the strike in 2007. And then they brought it back because of the strike. And now it's like a big thing.
Interesting.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
a smart, that's a kind of and a...
Big Brother also got two seasons during the strike. They did one in fall and one in summer. Or whatever it was.
So let's talk about this. So we are still feeling the lasting effects from this first strike in 2007, 2008. Not only did that time frame really propel reality TV into an unprecedented level, like we were discussing, and of course a lot of studios and networks relied upon that, but in the early days of YouTube and the early days of online streaming or content, Joss Whedon took charge and made his own thing. He made Dr. Horrible's sing-along blog with Neil Patrick Harris.
Felicia Day,
yeah. And it was just one of her first big things.
Yeah.
She'd been out.
Because after that, she started getting into stuff like The Guild. And yep. Yeah, that's really kind of got her up in the map.
Now she's on Geek and Sundry.
That's what the strike was about too, wasn't it? The online rights and streaming. And
there was something about that in there, yeah, I think.
Really?
Yeah. It was something with the... The content being online and how much they got when it was
Yeah. So I listen to a lot of script notes and they talk about this because they are WGA writers. I want to really mention that this now, because of how online services are so prevalent in this day and age today, this is a much more immediate effect than ever before.
Oh, yeah.
Alex, what's going to be affected now if we get... the strike happening this day and age.
Okay, so if we have the strike happen this time, all the late night shows will be very much affected because they write it, you know, up to the night before. So, or even the day, that day.
Yeah.
So the Jimmy Kimmel, James Corden, Stephen Colbert, all of that will probably be very much toned down, or the comedians will have to step up their game a lot and write their own stuff. Saturday Night Live, they only have a few episodes left, but one of them is the Melissa McCarthy episode. Those probably not happen because they need the writers to write the content for that. So the TV season goes from September to May. So since we're pretty much done with the TV season, those shows won't be affected. So they'll have till about June or July to make the deal and get the writers back in the room to write the new season starting in September for the network shows. But then the summer shows, some of those are still fine-tuning the last episode, so those might be affected. The Netflix shows, Jessica Jones, and Netflix has a bunch of shows on their slate that they already have finished. So like House of Cards and all that will be fine.
Yeah.
But then the shows that they're working on, like Jessica Jones, like those will be very much affected. And those might be delayed or shortened seasons or whatever it is.
Daredevil maybe?
Daredevil might be too, maybe. Yeah.
So what are the terms for the new, what are their terms right now? Have you heard of any of these yet?
I don't. Do you know?
I know some of them. I know that one of... Again, like, I'm not completely sure.
You might say some right there. And one of them is, like, healthcare or something.
Well, healthcare, definitely. But wages. One of the big things that they're talking about is a lot of writers are forced to sign exclusive agreements with networks and shows. So if you are writing for this one show, you cannot write for any other show.
Right.
So if you're writing for a show that goes for, you know, a couple months, the rest of the year you're unemployed and you can't find other work. So they're trying to get them to be able to lift that agreement because without the amount of worked hours, they can't get the health insurance that they need.
Exactly.
And the Writers Guild can't, they're like, we can't pay for this when you're not allowing us to work. You know, mm-hmm. like, so there's that back and forth where it's either you give us better health care or you don't give us this exclusive rights agreement. Mm-hmm. Because if you do that, then we can't, it's just not going to be feasible for the writers.
Yeah. It really sucks because I really do think I mean, after Breaking Bad, I think we are in a new golden age of TV, starting with Breaking Bad and then, you know, Sons of Anarchy, and now we're in 13 Reasons Why. There's so much good TV now.
And like with Netflix and, in general, just with all the Netflix originals.
And Hulu Amazon originals, and Hulu, Amazon. Yeah. And I really think the writer's strike could really take a toll on all the good TV that's coming out right now.
Now, it's startling how immediate of an impact it could have on our TV that we watch. Like, I wonder if they can circumvent that, like those shows, late night shows like Corden or Colbert, where they break out a lot of their segments into videos later. Could they theoretically do maybe on a different set or somewhere like very low budget and do YouTube like news articles? Or would that count as writing?
It'd have to be a different YouTube channel. It would have to be a completely different medium. It would not be able to
embody the same
channel. Yeah, they would have to do like a self-produced thing because, you know, if you're going through any kind of payroll, if you're going through any kind of official thing, you have to go through the union if you're getting paid as a writer.
Yeah.
So if you're going to do your own online content, that's a different story as if you're going to start your own YouTube channel. So that stuff is, it doesn't affect you as much when you do that, like because it's your own terms. You're not working for anybody, and then you getting paid for your own writing, you're your own agent, you know?
Because if they, theoretically, they can do it. But if they would try, the networks or studios can come back and bite them hard. Because if it's the same content they're producing, except they're not producing it on their channel, there's got to be some exclusivity
deal.
It'll
be like, you know, if they're taking that same... It's the copyright thing. You know, if you're taking anything that's going to be too close to what they've been doing before, they're going to get bit in the ass. But if you take the same idea and turn it into something that's different, that fits a YouTube platform, they can't do anything about that.
I have an idea. Anybody in Hollywood can take this if they want. If the strike happens, I say you get Colbert, Jimmy Fallon, James Corden, Jimmy Kimmel, and Conan all together. And I'm missing somebody.
Seth Meyers.
And they do like a variety show together.
I win.
Oh, that would be so fun.
Imagine just seeing all these fucking hosts who have all had a long-standing background in writing comedy and acting in comedy to do something together. It'd be crazy.
Can I just say, like,
though? Unity.
That would never happen.
I know.
They're on all these different networks.
Yeah, but the thing is, if they're doing YouTube stuff together while the strike's happening, they're not beholden to... They're not doing the same thing.
I think they're under contract.
Maybe. They're going to have to see, what their contract still lets them do and not do. Because for those people, their public image is their faces and their name is a brand.
Sure.
So that's going to be an issue. The writers, though, that's the whole thing. If it's the writers doing something different, that's going to be a different story.
Yeah.
Yeah, because if they're no longer going to be working for them and it's not in their contract, if they're not breaking their contract, then they can do whatever they want. As for them, they're definitely making enough to not do anything about this. Yeah,
sure. They could just hang out and just go on vacation.
So... Also, another interesting thing, during the last strike, my mom had a show called LA Roundtable, and she was trying to have one of the writers on, actually one of the creators now of Modern Family, to talk about the strike, but the union said that he couldn't come on. What is his name?
And talk about it, because it would represent the entire guild, essentially?
Yeah, his name is Steven Levitan, I think, and so he had a show called Back to You, which... I really like it. It used to be on Fox. It was about a newsroom.
Sounds like it. Yeah.
So he used to have that show, and that show got canceled because of the strike last time. And now, then he went on to create Modern Family. He was one of the lucky ones to have like a hit after the strike. Mm-hmm. But I think a lot of people, you know, were out of work and didn't pick back up after the strike.
Yeah. Ended.
Yeah. So there's an immediacy to the TV side, but I'm more fascinated. The first thing I thought of was film is going to be fucked. Because, yes, I watched Heroes when the first strike happened, or the strike in Our Time happened. But this, to me, I wanted to bring up something that happened. So the pipeline for Hollywood production is pretty rigid. And, of course, it starts with a good screenplay, whatever. But there were some films from the last strike that... So the late 2007, early 2008 strike affected films such as X-Men Origins Wolverine.
Boo.
Quantum of Solace.
Oh, God, I wanted the time back I spent watching that movie.
And Transformers Revenge of the Fallen. Is there a pattern you're seeing here? So this happened at least 18 months after the strike ended. And they're all critically panned. They're one of the lowest in their franchises, which is ironic. They're mostly franchise films.
If you think about it, if the writers are on strike, your first instinct is to go to the franchises that you have already and be like, okay, let's just make new ones of these and try and make some money off of this. Because if you come up with a new movie, I mean, it's going to be pretty shitty because you need a new idea.
Yeah, and I feel like, especially now, it's going to be interesting because I feel like with the strike as it is now, it won't affect it will affect Hollywood in a huge way. It will still not affect a lot of the franchises because if they're they're working with a lot of people overseas anyways. So if they just got a product together, so like if they got a Transformers movie, I know that The Last Knight is coming out. If they got something like that or like a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles thing, they just put a shit script together that the director and whoever just wrote together and they're not writers and whatever it is, and they just put something together and just put crazy visual effects and sell it to China, they're still going to make a lot of money.
Well, wait, you're saying that Put Vin Diesel in it,
put Scarlett Johansson in it.
You're saying the director would write it? Wouldn't that just spit in the face of WGA?
Not necessarily. No, like whoever writes it. Like
James Gunn or whatever.
Like, no, you know, if they, I mean, a lot of the people who are writers, directors won't do it because they're still writing for the WGA. But if they are, so these are people who don't write, you know, and they're not going to hire, whatever way it is, if they just get something on the page and then make a movie that's really explosion-y and flashy and sell it overseas, they're going to make a lot of money. So the terms, in terms of like the content, in the Hollywood system will take a huge hit for that. But then I think that it's going to... I think this is going to be a very interesting time to see how Hollywood stands up. Because you're going to see what they're going to do in the face of no scripts. But also, this is going to be a great way for independent films to make a big rise. Because without the WGA writers, the people who don't... people who are going to just independently make their own films, I feel like that's what Hollywood's going to buy at that point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but my question, before we started recording, I asked you, would a writer who is trying to make a movie who's non-guild, would he get blacklisted? And you said yes.
You said if you try to sell your writing. If you're trying to market yourself as a writer to say, I'll write for you networks and I'll write for you studios.
But they couldn't hire you. Huh? Oh, wait, they could.
No, if they hire you like that, like if you're not under the WGA and you're just going to do this for a very cheap like amount of money, that's not good. But if you're an independent filmmaker and you just write and make your own film and you're selling your film, that's a different thing.
Okay, so that's why I was asking, because to me, that's the same thing as these directors writing their own stuff and selling it. That could be they could be blacklisted from ever getting in the Writers Guild.
Well, that's a different... I don't know about how that works with the Writers Guild. It's just, it's more like, you know, I have friends who are event cinematographers and like videographers and all that stuff. And one of my friends was about to be hired by Coachella to do like aerial footage and all that stuff.
Very cool.
And right before, like a couple weeks before, Coachella was like, we actually found someone who's going to do it for $300. Oh. So we're not going to hire you.
Oh my God.
And he's like, well, fuck you guys. And he looked at the other guy's stuff and he's like, it's not going to be as good. And he's like, fuck you guys who are going to just lowball everything just so you can get jobs. That's the kind of like ethic that they're not going to want from someone who's working for the Writers Guild. You know, like that's what they're not going to have. Because if you can't stand together, then you're fucked. But then if you're making your own content, so like independent filmmakers, a lot of them aren't in the Writers Guild.
Absolutely.
So if you write your own shit, you make it, and then Hollywood buys the whole film from you.
Okay.
You're not buying the script. You know?
Yeah.
But I feel like this is going to be a completely different wave of independent filmmakers, because these are filmmakers who are making stuff because they want to make it, and the Writers Guild can't do anything because they're not part of the union. But then you're not selling your script to say, Hollywood, make this movie for me.
Right.
Because then Hollywood's not hiring the writer, they're hiring, they're buying the film. It's a finished product. So it's going to be a very different dynamic, I feel like. I mean, I could be totally wrong about all this stuff, but I feel like that's going to be a good opportunity for Hollywood to make a change. Because if you also think about all the Sundance films, all the independent festival films, none of them are independent. They're not independent. So I feel like No. Like, I mean, if La La Land was at Cannes.
I guess.
Yeah, none of these films are independent.
Well, I wouldn't say none of them.
Well, the ones that get out of Sundance aren't. Like, none of those, very, very few. Manchester by the Sea is not technically independent.
I guess they buy distribution, but they're not.
A lot of times they're
about the true independent nature of films, they're not attached to the studio system. They don't have millions of dollars. They said that Rush with Chris Hemsworth and Daniel Brühl was an independent film. And I'm like, how many millions of dollars was that?
Yeah.
That's not an independent film.
No way.
Like, people also, you know, like, I also called Black Swan an independent at the time. I'm like, no, it's not. That's what they call indie. Mm-hmm. Like, I feel like indie is now a different thing than independent. Because indie is just stuff that, like, Fox Searchlight, Paramount Vantage, they pick up.
Weinstein.
Zookeeper's Wife, you know.
A24.
That was a sequel to Zookeeper, right?
Yes. We bought a zoo.
Oh, okay. It's a trilogy, really.
Yeah. So I feel like now's going to be a really interesting time to see what people are going to make. Because people are still going to create content regardless.
I feel like stuck between a rock and a hard place. Because I don't have the money yet to make a film of my own and then sell that. Because obviously this strike, even if I did that, even if I had a script ready now and went out and made the film, by the time I'm done making the film, theoretically this is going to be done. Like between like post-production, all that stuff, I'm going to be done. The film and the writer's strike will be done. Whereas if I had a script that was ready now and wanted to sell it because I want to make this film, but I don't have the financing, I'm trying to make it, I can't.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, I would definitely look into it. And, like, since you're going to script notes tonight, like, that would be a good question for you to ask.
They'll bring it up. They're going to bring it up tonight for sure.
Because...
WGA?
Oh, all the... I mean, Ryan Johnson's going to be there. Anyway, yeah.
You might get some insider information tonight.
I'll get news for the update.
Yeah, because I feel like it'll be a very interesting time. Like, I don't know what... Because the whole point of a strike is that it helps the greater purpose. And if you're hindering that help from happening, people are not going to like you.
I understand that.
Yeah. So, like, even when I... this is, like, a small example. In school, we had a teacher, a drama teacher, who really, really abused a lot of the students. And not in a very obvious way. But, like, we were working... She worked us very physically. And, like, people were getting hurt left and right. And she didn't care. And so most of us went to the board and said this was not okay to have done this. We did 12 shows in 7 days. And this was a very physical show, like vocally and physical, like very straining. And so they did an investigation. They started asking students. One person said they were fine with it and they called the investigation off. So, of course, we didn't like that person because we were trying to get some change to happen so that people don't get hurt.
Mm-hmm.
Like we have kids, we have some students who still like their ankles are still fucked up because of that show. Wow. And... she left with no consequences from that. So, like, that's what... If you have one person that says, oh, we're fine, then the strike is meaningless.
Yeah.
So that's the kind of idea behind, you know, everything. So it's not going to be necessarily like, oh, you can't work during that entire time. It'll be finding what can you do and what can't you do to help the movement.
Sure.
But at the same time, when the strike is over, you'll be in a better position. You'll get better benefits and better pay, hopefully.
Because sure. Also, if you start, like, you know, when however long the strike is going, if you just keep writing stuff and just getting better at it and have much more of a cache of things that you can just hand out to people,
yeah.
By the time the strike is over, I feel like you'll have more to start working off of.
And here is where I'm going to give you an update on the current event. So take it away, Jamie. You bitch. No.
You bitch. Take it away, Jamie.
Now, back to you, Jamie, for an update on what the hell is going on with this. Strike averted. I repeat, strike averted. Much better benefits, increases to their health plan, which ensure its solvency for years to come, made gains in minimums across the board, as well as an increase in a definition for TV writers, so 2.4 weeks of work for each episodic fee, parental leave. A lot of good stuff in this meeting was actually made, so it's really cool. I'm glad that it came through and that no one had to lose work, and it is good for another 3 years. So, yay! Back to the show.
So, I think that regardless of what's going on, the big thing is going to be for writers now to figure out what can they and what they can't do. And I think one of the big things that people can start transitioning into is figuring out a little bit more of like the online platform. Because I don't know exactly how that works with online, like narrative content. So like, because Netflix, Hulu, all that stuff is still, I feel like it's still covered under the WGA. Things that aren't would be just web content on YouTube.
Yeah.
Well, does YouTube Red... Is that covered?
YouTube Red, I think, is covered because it's officially a network now.
Okay. Yeah.
Because they actually... produce their shows and they produce movies. Like they're actually kind of competing. I feel like YouTube Red is what they're competing for, Hulu, Netflix, yeah. All that stuff, yeah. And Amazon. But YouTube in general, it's as long as you're kind of careful about like your like licensing, you're good. You can talk about whatever you want. It's yeah. It's a public online forum just with videos. And starting your own video channel on YouTube and doing comedic sketches and stuff, that's not That's not SAG New Media. That's not like, that's just YouTube. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I feel like that's a good way for people to start, because people take YouTube seriously. It's not like a, oh, you have a YouTube channel, that's cute. No, like the minimum that some people make with like just uploading one video a week is like 3,000 a month.
That's great.
I wish.
I know, right?
Oh my God.
I'm actually building a channel.
Good idea.
Well, I have a channel. I'm just going to do more with it.
Well, I'm going to tell you guys about some stuff afterwards. But like that comes to, you know, sort of that you can make money writing your own stuff, but it's not necessarily going to be something that you sell. Mm-hmm. So I think that, but you get your content out there, you know, like I think that's really important for people who aren't in the WGA, who want to still get work practiced and then get their content out there and available for people to see.
So I have a question for you. Seems like the new, but you know, when you put your things up on, I guess, Vimeo, mm-hmm. I feel like it's more the industry standard that you send around festivals, is
Vimeo
that right?
Vimeo is more of, because you get more, you get higher quality most of the time on Vimeo.
Okay.
And you
more
get...
More of a rapport, too, there compared to YouTube. It's more of like a higher tier product.
It's a
product.
Professional site. It's kind of like what you would consider like a LinkedIn for filmmakers.
Okay.
Because when you put stuff on Vimeo, you can even set the settings so they can download it. So like, mm-hmm. for My Film Jerky... when I have it on like the online platforms, they can see it, and when they look at the link, they can download it. But that's only because I'm sending it to festivals, so they're able to download it there, so they can have it if they.
So you need to have the certain login to see it.
Well, you get a password. Yeah. Okay. So and the password's on the festival site when I send it to people.
Okay. And have we said your short gotten to where?
Yeah, I'm going to the Short Film Corner at Cannes.
No big deal. Just Cannes. So. Oh my God, that's awesome.
So it'll be fun. I just got my plane tickets and I just booked my Airbnb for my time in London because I'm going to be there for a couple days.
But when is it?
The festival goes, I think, from like the 20th through the next week. I'm going to be there from like the 22nd through the 25th.
That's awesome.
Of May. Yeah.
So you get to like walk the red carpet and everything.
I'm not sure, because since we're at the Short Film Corner, so the Short Film Corner is not, it's not competition. We're not there to compete. We're not actually even quote unquote premiere there. That's just a professional screening.
Huh.
So lots of buyers and distributors are going to be there.
Oh, nice.
And I'm sending postcards to everybody that I want to be there. It's like TIFF's program is going to be there, and Sundance's program is going to be there. Their short film program is going to be there. So I'm going to send my stuff over.
Cool. Smart.
Hey, come see my short.
Smart.
So that's kind of what is going to happen there. So I think we get credentials for the Short Film Corner, so we can go see everybody else's shorts, but awesome. We don't get to see anything at the festival unless we buy tickets, and those tickets are expensive.
No.
Ugh.
Or you could just make friends with somebody and be like, hey, bring me.
Hey,
hook me up.
But so that's happening next month.
Now, but. Back to the YouTube platform of these people being able to do things on YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
Times have changed since Last Strike.
Yeah.
YouTube now is more of a higher quality thing than it ever had been during that strike.
Yes.
Did they do it on, I can't remember, I think Dr. Horrible was either on YouTube or his own site for a while?
I think it was on his own site because you can like buy that on iTunes and stuff. I don't know exactly what platform that was on.
Yeah.
The way I saw it was actually Netflix.
Okay.
And then I bought the whole thing. Then I got the DVDs. So I don't exactly know how it happened, but it was definitely a web series, and that's like one of the first web series that really made anything of itself, because it was someone like Joss Whedon doing it.
Yep.
And that's kind of what the power of YouTube did, and people, that's why originally didn't take it that seriously.
Yeah.
And eventually they started to take it, like if you're auditioning for certain things, they ask you how many YouTube followers do we have, how many Instagram, how many Twitter, because that's a huge deal now. Social media is huge. And the way you market yourself on those channels, the way you present yourself is actually so important.
Mm-hmm.
And with just a little bit of a hardcore following, you can make money. Because after that, again, this is why I feel like as a writer, even if you do get onto YouTube, it's not narrative content necessarily. Because it's you, you're selling yourself as your personality. So, train of thought derailed. Woo! for instance, people start getting brand deals, and that's one of the big ways people make money is off of brand deals.
Yeah.
So after you get a certain amount of following,
Which we would love.
Yeah, I know, right?
So, hey, anyone, please sponsor us. We'll have porn sites can sponsor us. That's fine.
So, like, they'll start contacting people being like, hey, we would like you to use this product on your YouTube video to do something creative and fun with it, and then we'll give you this much money.
Mm-hmm.
And from there, you can do some negotiations. You can say, I'll do this if you give me this much or blah, 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 blah. And you get brand deals off of that. And that's why a lot of YouTubers are shameless about it. Like, they're like, hey, so I'm doing blah, blah, blah this today, and then I'm also drinking my Mio whatever in this water, blah, 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 shake it up and drink it. Like, have you guys seen the Sassy Gay Friend?
No.
Oh my gosh, you guys need to watch this. It's hilarious. Anyways, like, even that was like a couple videos that just blew up. And after that, Mio, do you know Mio?
Yeah, the little squirt.
The water, yeah.
Jump.
They did a brand deal with them, and so they made money off of those videos. Like, it's and they don't do a lot anymore, but like, all they needed was a couple, and then they'll still make money.
Yeah, that's awesome.
I feel like the tying it in with the strike, the YouTube content is going to be interesting to see where that goes from now, because I do feel like some people might start to put their own stuff on YouTube and not make it like we're going to spend thousands of dollars, we're going to get paid, blah, blah, blah. This is just passion stuff that might start coming out. Even more so than it is now.
Do you think that YouTube stars will start getting more shows? Like, if the writers stop writing, then couldn't they just go to the YouTube stars?
People already do that, actually. A lot of the YouTube influencers are already getting...
red shows. They get red.
Yeah, red shows, and even sometimes they get their own spots on different things.
I know, like, 5 years ago, didn't Fred get his own movie on Nickelodeon or something?
He had three movies. Fred, like, a really high-pitched, oh my god, guy, you know? Never heard of him?
I don't know Fred.
No?
It's probably a good thing.
Yeah.
I just keep thinking of Freddie Wong.
Oh.
You know Freddie Wong?
What?
No, that's one of the... Freddie Wong.
Yeah, Freddie Wong and his people did Video Game High School, and that was on YouTube on their channel, and then eventually Netflix bought it, and so it's on Netflix.
Mm-hmm.
It was.
He has a show on Hulu, too, called Rocket Jump.
Yeah. Rocket Jump.
Yeah.
So, it's like that. Like, I feel like that's slightly different, because I think that's a different contract than it is with, because it's not a TV show.
Yeah.
Yeah, none of that stuff was technically a TV show. I think Video Game High School was kind of, but then I don't know if they marketed themselves as
it's
that.
It's probably on IMDb as web series, to be honest, I guarantee.
Yeah. So, like, I don't know how that works with the WGA, honestly, because I'm not in the Writers Guild.
Wow.
But, yeah.
I guess we should hope for a writer's strike to not happen. That'd be great.
It does. It's like wartime. It helps propel change in the industry.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to think. I'm trying to fathom how this could help other people succeed. Like, I think YouTube could become... This could be the saving grace for YouTube after the whole ad apocalypse thing. I don't know if you heard about that.
Adpocalypse.
Because of some things like PewDiePie, he made an obviously satirical, making fun of Nazis... And then that blew up, and people started. YouTube started giving advertisers the option to block certain filter certain things out for their content. So everybody's pulling out of YouTube. And everybody who's staying can say, if you swear in your video, we don't have to sponsor you. We can choose that, which is stupid. I mean, so it's becoming this point where YouTube is essentially killing itself.
Right? Yeah,
because they're losing a lot of revenue with ads now. And they're trying to make it so people can come back and, like, giving the advertisers control. But when you give advertisers control...
Then you're giving them control over content.
And then it's going to shut the whole fucking channel down. So this could help them turn that around, hopefully. Shut up, Wii U.
I like Wii U.
I haven't talked to you in years. No. I want to switch gears. Not really good segue here. To the 52 pickup. This week is interesting because I watched a film I loved as a younger kid. I wasn't a kid. I was a teenager. I was about to start my freshman year in high school, and lo and behold, a monster movie, which kind of, I think, in part, regenerated the love of monster movies for Sci-Fi Channel, because it was like right before those started to come back into play, and it was the 1999 release Lake Placid, starring Bridget Fonda, Brendan Gleeson, and Betty White.
Wow. Ooh, Betty White?
Betty White.
What?
I've never seen this.
this movie, I'm not going to give it away, but Betty White is... The reason why Betty White's so fun to me, because she blew up as this dirtier grandma. She's always been kind of like prolific in everything she's ever done. You know, she was on game shows in the 50s with her husband, Steve Allen. She was on Golden Girls, of course. And she came back in this interesting way that led her to, I think she was in Hot in Cleveland. Is that the show that was on TV Land, I think she was in?
I'm not sure.
Spawned her dirty side, because in Lake Placid, she's an old granny that lives by the lake. She's fucking swearing left and right. She's sarcastic. She's a pain in the ass. It's really funny.
I want to watch this.
And she stole the fucking show. And the great thing about this film, not only that, I mean, the cast obviously is amazing, but it also was set in Northern Maine. It wasn't filmed there, of course, as we all lamented. Yeah, wow. But in Northern Maine, in this fictional lake called Black Lake. But it's in Aroostook County, the county that's the top of Maine that I grew up in.
Wow.
Oh, I forgot also, of course, Bill Pullman, Oliver Platt's in there as well.
Bill Pullman?
Yep.
What?
Bill Pullman.
That's
awesome. And
the one in...
Independence Day.
And...
Before You Embarrass Yourself.
No. No, the Sandra Bullock romantic comedy.
It Could Happen to You?
No.
Or While You Were Sleeping?
Yes, While You Were Sleeping. And Betty White was in the other Sandra Bullock romantic comedy, The Proposal.
Yes, that's right.
And wasn't she dirty in that movie?
No, she was weird. She had the whole Native American chant thing that she did. That was a little weird.
Yeah.
This movie, it's a cheesy, fun B movie that just happens to be pretty good compared to most things out there nowadays. And it's just a big fucking alligator. It's all it is.
Whoa.
It's just a big fucking alligator. And so this scientist, I think she's a...
We're putting that in the show description. The topics and then a big fucking alligator.
Yeah. Bridget Fonda plays a scientist that goes and investigates this town in Maine. I think she's in New York. I don't want to ruin much of it because it's so funny. Like, it's so good. And of course, the special effects don't hold up. I mean, that's my mantra when I do all these old challenges. What holds up? Not the special effects. Because, you know, especially late 80s, early 90s, and then late 90s were really bad. It's weird how... When they started shifting to special effects digitally, they were too early, I think.
Uh-huh. Except for Terminator 2.
No, but yeah. But I'm saying that they were so early in the process that's why PlayStation and N64 look so bad.
Yeah.
Because they were trying so hard. The technology just wasn't there yet. Whereas practical effects have always held up.
Yeah.
I mean, 80s movies are mostly better than the majority of the 90s because they use predominantly practical effects, which I'm always a fan of.
Yeah. Thanks, Star Wars.
I mean, it's not just Star Wars. It's a whole fucking... very cool. Steve Miner directed this, which I think is hilarious because he had directed some of the old Friday the 13th movies, Part 2. He did Halloween H2O.
Is this a horror comedy?
Forever Young. It's like... I would say it's a... Yeah, it's not a... It's a comedy. It's an action. I guess it has some elements of horror. I mean, here in IMDb, it's listed action, comedy, horror.
Okay.
Which I think is a good... order of operations for that, because I think there is more action, there's a lot of comedy, and there are some good horror elements to it.
That's awesome. I love those movies.
You definitely should watch it. It's only 82 minutes long too. It's pretty short.
One that comes up to mind for me was Anaconda.
Yeah, I guess Anaconda and Lake Placid, which they eventually had to fight, were those two that started the whole... Yeah, I forgot about Anaconda, of course.
Yeah.
Did they do an Anaconda versus...
They did. Really shitty sci-fi version. It was not good, I heard.
Oh, I'm sure.
I haven't seen Anaconda.
But I just remember that... So J-Lo filmed Anaconda first.
Yep.
And then she did Selena.
Selena was first.
What year did Anaconda come out?
97.
Well, see, she filmed it first.
Oh.
And then she filmed Selena. But then as soon as they were like, Selena's going to be amazing, they pushed their release date way back so they can have Selena come out first and then Anaconda, because then they knew that they were going to get people.
That's smart.
Yeah. I believe that's what I heard.
So March 21st, 97 was Selena. April 11th. So they put Selena out before, I think, to kind of make sure they don't... So it was called Lake Placid versus Anaconda, which doesn't even make sense. But it was like a TV movie.
You should have just called it Big Fucking Alligator.
Big Fucking Alligator versus Big Fucking Snake.
Big Fucking Snake, yeah.
Done.
But Big Motherfucking Python.
A giant crocodile goes head-to-head with a giant anaconda. No shit. The town sheriff must find a way to destroy the two monsters.
Johnny Crocodile? Is that what you just said?
You gotta stop interrupting me. A giant crocodile goes head to head with a giant anaconda.
Johnny Crocodile.
Johnny Crocodile is a great...
That's his name?
Johnny Crocodile is a great... That should be the name of the movie.
Johnny Crocodile.
And the spoilers, the Johnny Crocodile character is a snake.
Serves him out a crocodile.
Oh my God, that's hilarious. And Robert Englund, Freddy himself, is in there as a small role.
That's... Oh, really?
Oh, he does a lot of B-movie shit. Now I'm curious if they shot any of it in Maine. Fuck you. New York and British Columbia. British Columbia does everything Maine. Oh, so bad.
Oh, British Columbia is a better Maine than Maine.
Fucking Canada.
Well,
Northern Maine's a better Canada than Canada, so fuck them.
Yeah. That was.
I think they also do the Fargo show in Canada, I think.
I mean, yeah, British Columbia is a good proxy. They did Colossal in British Columbia, which I think it was supposed to be similar to Maine. They called it Mainland. In the map she had, it was like legit pointing to Maine. So.
Yeah.
All right, Alex, take it away.
So I went to Best Buy. So now I'm in possession of the La La Land Steelbook, and there was a downloadable version of La La Land for iTunes or Ultraviolet in there. So in order to win the downloadable version of La La Land, email us why you love La La Land and a movie suggestion or a topic suggestion about something we can talk about on the show. And obviously your name.
And what's our email?
And our email is, I don't know what our email is. What is it?
Our email is notquitepod@gmail.com. So we had a long-running gag. We'll give you $5. August did it, and then Alex held it up for a while. If somebody emailed us. No one has ever emailed us.
Really?
For money. Maybe La La Land will be the thing that gets people out
Wouldn't
there.
Wouldn't that be great?
What? For somebody to win La La Land?
No, for somebody to email.
That'd be really cool.
That would be so nice. I've heard
podcasts get people responding to their shit all the time.
Yeah.
I know.
One day, we'll have somebody respond. Maybe it could be you. Yeah, you, listener.
Yeah, you could win.
You. Imagining a big finger pointed at your face.
I'm sorry, Brandon. You are excluded from this. I know you listen every week. And anyone else who was on the show ever is also excluded.
Ultraviolet HD. So email us.
Oh, God. So good. I think Brandon has the La La Land Steelbook anyway.
Oh, yeah.
Probably the same one.
I could not believe they were sold out. And then they searched all the Best Buys around us, and they were all sold out. And they somehow found one. Let's see if we can get one email before we do another one.
This is true. I appreciate that. Put me in check, because we have not gotten a single email in the fucking year of this show. So maybe I should just hold myself back in excitement.
If we can get an email, maybe we can start giving away more DVDs or, you know, whatever.
I would do that. I would buy Blu-rays just to give them away.
Yeah, that'd
be
great.
Somebody's interested.
Yeah.
Email us, bitches.
So email us, and you could win La La Land.
I shouldn't call our fans bitches.
It's an endearing term.
Sure.
Love you, bitches.
And finally, Tim, what is your communal film for next week?
The communal film that I have for you guys is The Mission from 1986.
Okay.
It stars Liam Neeson, Jeremy Irons, Robert De Niro. It's about Jesuit missionaries. So it's an interesting story. Do you have the synopsis pulled up? It's a visually stunning epic. The Mission recounts the true story of two men. A man of the sword, Robert De Niro, and the man of the cloth, Jeremy Irons.
Wow. So what made you want to pick this movie?
Well, we talked about Ennio Morricone. Is that how you say his last name? He scored The Hateful Eight.
Mm-hmm.
But this score was just so beautiful. And for some reason, like even as a kid, just watching this, I was obsessed with the score. Like I just kept asking people to get me the score. There's a whole thing there that you'll hear. It's the title in the actual soundtrack is just called Gabriel's Oboe, and it's like an oboe solo that he does for some of the native people, and then people love it, and that's kind of his segue into certain things. And I could not get enough of that. It's like every time I hear that melody, I like start. I'm like, and it was so cool to see him actually win the Oscar.
Yeah, I
because
know.
Because he's so.
Had he ever won before?
No, that was his first Oscar.
There was some bad blood between him and Tarantino for a while, right?
I'm sure there was.
And they eventually worked together, which was just crazy.
Yeah. Anyway, so it's a great story of redemption, but also. I don't exactly even like know how to describe it. It's been so long since I've seen it, too.
Well, cool. Be exciting to see. I always like seeing 80s, especially 80s films I haven't seen yet. And De Niro films I haven't seen yet.
Yeah, and I remember them being spectacular. So Liam Neeson doesn't have a very big role in it.
Yeah, I noticed he's not in the credits. Yeah, in the initial.
But then, like, I don't think that was, he was that big back then.
No, he wasn't.
So, like, it was really cool to see that after I knew who Liam Neeson was, and I'm like, oh, he's in this too. Anyways, that's our communal movie.
Good awesome. Cop, Bad Cop was in this movie.
Oh my god, yes.
I am good cop.
Cool. Okay.
So that's the episode 56. Follow us on Twitter, NQHPod. On Facebook, Not Quite Hollywood. Email us for that goddamn code, people. La La Land is yours if you email us with a good, valid reason why you like La La Land. And give us a topic or a suggestion. Maybe you want us to talk.
Guys, here's a tip. All you have to say is, I love La La Land because La La Land. And we'll give you the code.
Well, you have to also suggest a film or
topic. And suggest a film or something.
It's yes. A little work there.
But yeah, just a little bit more. But just say, I love La La Land because La La Land.
And we should say the very first person that emails us will get it. That qualifies.
Everything is
fine. If we get a bunch, it'll be like random.
The best reason.
Thing, but.
I don't think that would work.
No? Okay, first person.
I mean, just because I don't expect a lot of people to email us, first off.
Okay.
And second off, okay, well, let's do this. Yeah, let's do this. This is going to post the 4th. The cutoff for who we pick is May 10th.
Yeah.
So May 10th, you have some time after it downloads on the 4th. After this goes up on the 4th, you have about a week before we announce the winner. And we will announce the winner on Twitter and Facebook. So, hey, follow us there. Like I said, not NQHPod, and then Not Quite Hollywood on Facebook.
Subscribe on iTunes.
iTunes, of course. Subscribe there. You can read all of my stuff at guyinawire.com, where I post this. The entire backlog of the show is up there. I do We Need Movies on there. The 52 pickup you've heard us discuss is on there every week or so. And I also put my cancer story up there, my autobiographical book, my first draft, first draft form. But I'm also Guy on a Wire on Instagram.
Yeah, you are.
Awesome.
And
you can follow me on Doggone Movie Reviews. I would also like to thank Carlos Cortez for the idea for the writer's topic. That was pretty cool.
Strike?
Yeah, the strike topic.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, thank you, Carlos. If I'd known, yeah. I would have said that earlier.
And also, shout out to my best friend, Spencer Hansen, who just had a baby just now.
Oh, congrats, he just texted baby.
Me. Congratulations.
Yeah. Is he going to name it Not Quite Hollywood?
No, I don't think so.
He should.
He just not texted me that name, I'm an uncle. Quite, so that's middle. Pretty cool.
Oh, he's an uncle?
Yeah. Yay. Well, I'm an uncle, yeah.
Oh, you're an uncle?
Well, to the baby, I guess. Not genetically, but like...
Oh, he says, so yeah. He texted you saying you're an uncle.
Yeah.
Okay, I got it. I get it.
Yeah.
And you can follow... You can follow me on Instagram at Tim Jim Lim Artist. And if you search Tim Jim Lim on YouTube, you'll find my YouTube channel. And uh-huh. I'll be posting more things on that channel.
Especially if there's a writer's strike.
I have to subscribe now. I didn't know you had a YouTube channel.
Right now, it's just a whole bunch of acapella stuff that we've done as a group. Yeah, it's fun.
I like acapella.
Yeah.
So you're saying you're going to be in Pitch Perfect 3?
I mean, the Brazian boys might make an appearance. Or follow my Facebook page at Tim J. Lim.
Oh, that's right. You have a professional Facebook page.
I do.
God, I don't have that. Oh, that's embarrassing. So if you want to follow along, watch The Mission with us, and we'll discuss it next week. And email us for your chance at the La La Land copy. We'll put all the names in random and pick a random generator and pick hopefully more than three people email in. Let's fingers crossed.
If it's just two, we'll eeny, meeny, miny, moe it.
Well, yeah, at that point it's pretty easy. It can still random generator though.
That's true. Whoever has the coolest name wins.
Oh, no biases here. No bias. But in the meantime, I'm Jamie.
I'm Alex.
And I'm Tim.
And
that's weird. We're out of order.
Is it? Oh yeah, we are.
Oh, it's okay.
It's cool.
I think we just lost a cool credit. Okay, bye everybody.
Bye.
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 Bye. Bye.